Welcome to Public Health Matters with Dr. Christina M. Madison, the founder and CEO of the Public Health Pharmacist, PLLC, a public health consulting firm. She is passionate about spreading knowledge on public health in order to create healthier and happier communities.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Public Health Matters. My name is Dr. Christina Madison, also known as the Public Health Pharmacist. I am your host. Today, I have another extraordinary guest, Dr. Katrina Skinner, who I am so pleased to have join us today. She is a pediatrician, advocate, leader, force of nature. I'm just so blessed to know her and have her in my world. We met because of our love for advocacy and speaking up and speaking about what we believe in and what our passions are. And today we will be discussing how pharmacists and pediatricians can align and support patients and in general, really just looking at adolescent health and how we can support each other and how we can advocate for public health. And with that, I will go ahead and let Katrina talk a little bit about her journey and where she's currently practicing.
Thank you so much for having me here, Christina. It's an honor to be on your podcast. As you mentioned, I'm a pediatrician. I have served as the president of the Alabama chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics for the last 2 years. I've also founded an organization called Women in Pediatrics that helps to support the potential of female pediatricians and provides them with education that we don't find within the traditional medical education setting. I started out as an independent pediatrician right out of residency, and I knew that I needed to find something to be passionate about. One of my mentors told me this, and he said, you know, you need to, yes, you can be a general pediatrician, but you have to be passionate about something. And so I decided as a resident that that would be breastfeeding as one thing and immunizations as my other thing. And so, you know, as I started out in practice, I just made those two things kind of my platform, and it's taken off from there. And so that immunization piece is one of the things that we connected over.
Absolutely. And I am so impressed with your advocacy work, especially living in a state that sometimes isn't as friendly to some of those advocacy around health and wellness, and in particular, reproductive health, since that is something that has been top of mind for a lot of women. I'm curious, you know, as we kind of navigate this politically charged space, I'm curious of what things that you have either changed or implemented or continue to do in your practice to support your patients when they come in with questions about whether or not, you know, certain services are available or no longer available.
Yeah, so we definitely face a challenging political climate in our state, especially where children and adolescents are concerned. And fortunately, we have a great team with our Alabama AAP. We have, you know, advocates who fight for, you know, for what's right for kids. And I have been lucky to be part of that team. And, you know, I've spent time in our state house where we have testified before our legislators about, you know, protecting kids and, you know, their right to access health care. It has definitely been challenging, especially over the last 2 to 3 years. We faced things that have challenged, you know, our ability to provide vaccinations for our patients, and definitely things that have challenged, you know, the right of our patients to access healthcare with their physician and to have that relationship upheld. You know, the legislature has tried to come between the patient, the parent, and the physician, and that's been really difficult.
Well, luckily they have your leadership and your background and your expertise in order to help with those things. And so, you know, from my standpoint, you know, as a pharmacist, I think there really has been an opening to have a better collaboration with pediatricians, especially as the emergency declaration through the pandemic has allowed pharmacists to provide more pediatric vaccinations down to the age of three. And I'm curious, you know, what ways you think that as pharmacists, we can help to support you, especially as we see, you know, people thinking, oh, okay, now that my shots are done, I don't need to go to the pediatrician, when really that's not the case. You know, right. that the wellness visit is really there for more than just vaccinations, and how we can help support that and make sure that kids are really getting all of the services that they need.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, especially in a state like Alabama, where a lot of our counties are very rural, and there are some counties where we don't have a single pediatrician in practice. And so having other providers who can administer vaccinations can be helpful to those areas where children are underserved. But it is very important to remind those families that just because you had your vaccinations doesn't mean your child is up to date on their wellness care. And you're exactly right. Those wellness visits are so important for more than just immunizations. You know, we are going to screen a child for developmental delays, mental health disorders, other physical conditions that a parent may not notice, but that, you know, we have years of training to teach us how to pick up those things. For instance, I have an adolescent patient in my practice who came in for a routine wellness visit, and she thought she was fine and healthy. And it was detected on her physical exam that she had a small lump in her thyroid gland, and it ended up being cancer. And fortunately for her, it's a very treatable and curable type of cancer. But if, you know, if that hadn't been caught when it was, it may not have been quite so treatable and curable. And, you know, the great part of that story is that that patient has gone on to become an advocate for checkups as well. And she has used her voice to encourage her peers to remember to get their checkups too. But I think that that is a great point, that just because a child has had their vaccinations and they may have a certificate of immunization that says that's up to date, they still need to have that contact with their regular primary care provider.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. Just the thought process around, you know, the physical exam and how important doing a physical exam is. Obviously, you know, as a pharmacist, I'm not a diagnostician. However, one of the first things I do when I see my patient is I look at them from head to toe. Like, you know, I look to see if they have any abrasions, any rashes. I tend to look at people's feet, which I think sounds kind of a little bit odd, but like oftentimes I'll be like, oh, you know, do your shoes always fit that tight? You know, have you always had that kind of swelling, you know, or is this new, or, you know, and it's like some of those things, especially elderly patients, like that are maybe a little, have a different body habitus. They don't look at their feet as much, or they don't look at their lower extremities as much. And now that we see more childhood obesity, same thing, you know, they may not be noticing, you know, edema or issues with their extremities. Or the other thing too, that I see a lot of is issues with dentition and poor oral hygiene. You know, as we look at, you know, things that people tend to cut out of their healthcare, one of the first things that I see that they'll cut out is dental care. And not realizing that oral health is related to overall health and wellness. And I see that, you know, sometimes in younger kids that like haven't gone to the dentist, haven't, you know, gotten the fluoride varnish, and, you know, in not realizing that, you know, dental care is part of healthcare. Like, you can't cut it out. It's not elective. Right. So, you know, I really love the fact that, you know, that you were able to pick that up on a physical exam. Also, talking about the fact that yes, telehealth and telemedicine is helpful, but it doesn't replace an in-person visit, and it doesn't replace a physical exam, because there are certain things that you will only know and only pick up by physically seeing the person in your space.
Yeah. That's so true. And, you know, right now, I mean, the Academy of Pediatrics has declared a mental health crisis in children and adolescents. And, you know, just staying up to date on your vaccines isn't going to, you know, screen your child for a mental health condition. And pediatricians have ways of assessing your child for that. And it's hard when you're the parent and you're seeing your child every day, all day. You know, you may not notice subtle changes that occur over time. You know, and so, yes, I mean, if your child has, say, a suicidal threat or, you know, gesture, that's obvious, but there are smaller changes that you may not detect just because it's been gradual and you have kind of been exposed to it every day. But your pediatrician has ways that they can help you kind of tease those things out. And then they have resources and recommendations they can make to help you get the appropriate help for your child.
Yeah, I think that's really important to know. And then, you know, the other thing too is the pandemic, not to bring up, the big pink elephant in the middle of the room, but it's really impacted everyone from the mental health side. So in particular, kids, because they missed time in school and that social emotional development. I know my kids, even though they're only 4 and 6, like I can tell the difference from when they're in school versus when they were doing virtual, and not having that connection. Personally, I've been very open about my son's, struggle with being on the autism spectrum and his development as it relates to speech and feeding and having a mask on and having a therapist with a mask on, is really challenging when you have a kid that's having trouble speaking and trouble eating. And so all of these things I think have kind of been a cascade of compounding events. And so I think it's really important to think about, asking people, how are you doing? And hoping that they answer you honestly. I've had instances where people have asked me that question and I've answered honestly and they were shocked. And I'm like, well, you know what? I need to be honest and tell you, like, not in a good space, or like, I'm having a fantastic day, whatever it is, be honest, be open. Because that's how people get resources and that's how they get help. One thing I was listening to NPR this morning, and I actually heard an interview with a psychologist who was talking about a young child who had had a suicidal attempt, and it took them 2 months to get a primary visit. And I think, like, that's unacceptable. And I was thinking to myself, man, I know that we have shortages with our mental health professionals, but it was really making me ponder, like, what are we doing to get to the point where that's prevented, that child didn't have that event first and foremost, but then what an injustice we're doing to that poor child by not allowing them to get access to services for such a long period of time post that event.
Yeah.
And it just really made me sad. And I was like, man, this is not good. So, obviously, like, doing things like the PHQ-9 and the anxiety scale and doing those things. And as pharmacists, those are things that we could do as well. Like, those are screening tools that we can use to help to refer back to you and to make sure that they know, hey, it's not just about your shots. Like, you need to go back to your pediatrician and you need to get this addressed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. I mean, and then the question becomes, if we're screening, then what do we do with the information? It's great to have that data, but we have to have a plan for what we're going to do with it.
So. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that that linkage to care piece is really important, and making sure that everybody that's on the patient's team is advocating for their best health and wellness. Mm-hmm. And that only happens when, if you do test for something, you know what to do if it's positive or if it's negative. So one thing I often talk with my students about is, don't just test for the sake of testing. So I always ask this question. We talk about sexual health. I said, if the patient is asymptomatic, would you test them for HSV? And they're like, of course you would test them. And I'm like, why? And they're like, well, but don't you want to know? And I'm like, is, if they're asymptomatic and they test positive, are you going to treat them or are you not going to treat them? And they're like, well, if they're asymptomatic, then we don't need to treat them. And I'm like, exactly. So your result is the same if you test or if you don't test. So now you've given them an expensive test and now you've freaked the patient out because mm-hmm. you've told them about a diagnosis that they're currently not symptomatic for. Yeah. Little things like that. Like, I just, it's one of those things where when you're in training, like, you just think you have to test for everything. Mm-hmm. Right. But is it going to be meaningful? Is it going to be impactful? And then also, when we think about our vulnerable populations, our minoritized communities, our LGBTQIA+ communities with limited resources, high rates of depression, high rates of anxiety, is it going to do them good? Right? Like, that's the thing I think about all the time. Like, before I do anything, I'm like, what is this going to change for this patient's life?
Mm-hmm.
So,
That's
and
a
I
great
know,
point.
you do this a lot too, because I mean, running a practice versus, you know, obviously being part of either a clinic or being part of a hospital system or being in a community pharmacy setting, it's slightly different because you really are your own boss. And it's like all of the different things that you have to look at when you first come in the morning, it's like a laundry list of things. It's not just patient care. It's making sure your staff is ready to go. It's making sure that they're culturally competent. It's making sure that they're, you know, feeling affirmed and supported. How do you do all of that? Granted, I know that that's a very loaded question, but I'm just curious because I think there are some people within the profession of pharmacy, as we now are starting to get allowed to do more things like, you know, sexual health and contraceptive mm-hmm. services, where you may see pharmacists thinking about doing these things on their own and maybe not as part of a developed system.
Right. Well, I would say, I mean, practice makes better. Okay. So I've been doing this for 13 years now, and I'm definitely more confident and capable than I was 13 years ago. I mean, I look back at that time and it was me and two employees, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? But now, you know, I mean, I've got, I don't know, 20 something people who work for me. And fortunately, some of those employees are my leadership team and they're fabulous. And so I have spent time cultivating people to be leaders, you know, and it's I think it takes very intentional effort to train someone else to be a leader, you know, when you have always been that person who's in charge, you know. And as a physician, I would imagine also as a pharmacist, we work really hard to get to where we are. You know, we have invested a lot of time and effort and money into our education and our training, and it is hard to delegate, you know, because you don't know that that person you're delegating to is going to do the job to your specifications, or that they're going to do it exactly like you would do it. Are they really going to follow up on whatever it is? And so it's hard to kind of relinquish some of those things that we need to relinquish. But in order for us to grow as leaders, we really have to learn how to do that. And so I have worked on myself personally to be able to delegate things, but also to train the people I'm delegating to learn how to delegate, you know, because you can't continue to grow and expand if the people under you can't also learn to be leaders. And so, you know, one of the things that I really worked on was, instead of, you know, when they would come to me with a problem, instead of just immediately solving it, which is so easy when you're a physician because we're taught to think quickly on our feet, instead of just immediately solving the problem, saying, well, how would you fix this? How would you handle this situation? And then training myself, if it's an okay solution, maybe it's not the same, but if it's okay, then let them run with it and then let them kind of figure things out. But then, you know, once they started to get better at problem solving without having to come to me for every little thing, and they started to, you know, kind of bring more mid-level leaders under them, teaching them the same thing, you know, instead of solving every problem for everyone underneath you, you make them start solving problems themselves, because you can never be an effective leader if the people under you are coming to you for every little thing, you know, if they're expecting you to micromanage everything for them. And so that's kind of the process that we've been in. A book that I found very helpful, I don't know if you like to talk about books, but one that we've been going through this year is called Traction by Gino Workman. And it has a great kind of framework for how you can structure your leadership team to help you be more effective. And so I would recommend that for anyone who's considering, you know, going out on their own or doing something that involves them, you know, wanting to grow as a leader.
Definitely put that in the show notes for sure. I love that comment that you made. Practice makes better versus practice makes perfect. I always say that don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I think you know, when we're looking at self-development and self-improvement, I really want to honor and affirm the fact that you have been so intentional and mindful about reading books with your staff, which I think is incredible. I don't know, you know, if there's a lot of bosses that do that. So I think that's fantastic. I'm glad that we'll be able to provide that information to the audience. And then, you know, for me, I've definitely been working on self-development. You know, one of my big things that I've really been focusing on this year has been only doing things that bring me joy, which is really hard because I'm a fixer. And I think that stems just from my childhood and my upbringing and wanting to be a people pleaser and, you know, never wanting to like fail, which, by the way, failure is not a bad thing. It's just there's no such thing as failure. There's just happy accidents. Right. And so, you know, I think surrounding yourself with people that are like-minded and have similar goals and are uplifting and affirming is really important for your professional growth and development. I know it's been super important for me. And one of the things that I love about meeting you, because I really feel like being around other women who have been able to achieve their goals and are so inspiring, just makes me want to be a better professional and a better wife and mother and just a overall good person and impactful in my community. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you. And I think that's a great point that, you know, the people, the voices, the content that we surround ourselves with definitely impacts the output that we have. You know, but to your other point, you know, failure. I mean, to me as scientists, which we both are, I just look at it as data, you know, and it's data that we can use to help inform our decisions going forward. And so, you know, if we look at it like it's a QI project, okay, so we got this data, this feedback, and now we have to use that to kind of come up with the next step in our QD or in our QI or in our PDSA cycle. And it's just data. That's it. It's not good or bad. It's just information that we have now and we can use it to educate ourselves and move forward. So that's why I like to look at it.
Absolutely love that. I absolutely love that. One other thing too, and obviously this is an audio recording, but those in the audience, I would highly encourage you to look Dr. Skinner up, because in addition to being a fantastic pediatrician, she is also extremely fashionable, which is also something else that I connected with you when we finally met in person for our speaker retreat at the beginning of this year. So, you know, the other thing too is that I think a lot of people are like, oh, you know, like, why does your provider, or why does your, you know, pharmacist or whatever have to look a certain way or be a certain way? And I think it's all about like what makes you feel good, mm-hmm. and what you know lifts you up, mm-hmm. uplifts you. And for me, I am a huge fan of fashion, and it is something that I think is important. You know, some people that's not their priority and that's fine. But if you look good, you feel good. And I think that that really does translate into your activities and how you show up in the world and how you present to others and how they receive you. So I would highly recommend that if you haven't ever used a stylist, try a stylist. it is a luxury, obviously, if it's something that you can financially afford. But if you do have the opportunity to do that once in your lifetime, I would highly recommend it, especially if it's a big event or a big speech or a big occasion, or if you're being honored, I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, it can definitely be fun. And especially, you know, if maybe fashion isn't one of your hobbies, it can make you feel a little bit more confident if you do have a big event.
Absolutely. So, this has just been such a treat and such a delight. And I am so happy that, you know, that you have, you know, really been able to, you know, give a light and a voice to women in medicine, and in particular, women pediatricians, because I think that, you know, that is something that needs to be supported and uplifted. When we look at the percentage of female physicians and the outcomes that they are able to really achieve with, you know, amazing patient care and amazing outcomes, they're better leaders. There's so many things that the studies have shown why it's better to have a female physician, and in particular, you know, having the individual taking care of the patient that is reflective of the community that they serve. Mm-hmm. And so I really just want to applaud you for, you know, your organization that you founded and the fact that you are really doing the work around helping this disparity within our healthcare system.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. There's a lot more work left to be done though.
Absolutely. So if people want to find you, follow you, reach out to you, if they have questions about how they can collaborate with pediatricians in their area, where can they find you?
The easiest place is my website, which is katrinaskinner.com. And I will say, if you want to see me in person, I am hosting a Women in Pediatrics retreat March 1st through 5th, 2023. And it's going to be in St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands. It is geared toward female pediatricians, but really our content is for any professional woman. So, you know, a female pharmacist could be invited as well.
I love it. And I know lots of friends that work in pediatrics. So I will definitely be making sure that my friends in the peds world are aware of this fantastic opportunity. Mm-hmm. Way to go. Breaking news right here.
Yes.
Awesome. Woo. So we will include that information in the show notes. And again, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're super busy. And I am your host, Dr. Christina Madison, also known as the public health pharmacist. You can find me on your favorite social media platform at the public health pharmacist. And don't forget to follow Pharmacy Times for more new episodes with incredible guests, just like Dr. Skinner. And remember, public health matters.
Stay safe, be well, and reminder, public health matters.